Whitney Pittman on the Red River Farm Network. Joining us is University of Minnesota Department of Entomology Professor Ian McCray. Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing in the field here and what kind of insect pressures people are dealing with so far this season.
Hi, Whitney. Yeah, sure. Well, it's kind of a mixed bag this year. We've had, we're still not seeing a lot of aphids. I mean, there's a few local populations here and there, but we're not seeing as many aphids and small grains as, you know, maybe most years we do see. But what we are seeing is in a number of different crops, we've got cutworms coming in. And for the last couple of weeks, especially kind of to the south of us, kind of south of Crookston and then down through Ada area, we're not seeing a lot of response with synthetic pyrethroids, and which is the kind of traditional insecticide that we use to control cutworms. And it doesn't seem to be working that well this year. I'm not sure if this is temperature when people are applying, or sometimes when you apply in the daytime, cutworm like to hang out underneath the soil in the daytime. They kind of crawl down the plant and they get underneath these little wee chunks of soil. If it's overcast, maybe a little darker than it is right now today, or if it's in the evening, they come out and they love to feed. And I suspect it's probably a predator avoidance mechanism, so they don't get eaten by birds and things like that. But if they're under the soil, it makes it so you really can't, kind of, if you're doing a foliar or even an aerial application, you really can't get that material to them at the time. And that may be part of it, but still, pyrethroids have enough residual that I would have anticipated these things getting back on the plant and being affected. But we're just not seeing as much efficacy in some fields as we have in the past. It could be a lot of our cutworm populations, depending on the species, get blown in from other locations. They don't, they may be populations that don't overwinter here, and they come in every year. So we may be getting them from an area that may have a little bit of resistance. I'm not sure. We're doing a few trials here on some cutworms that were dropped off last week, but we haven't really kind of gotten any response yet. So that's a little concerning. We're starting to see some grasshoppers in different places, and some places are seeing a lot of pressure. And again, synthetic pyrethroids usually work on those, and they seem to be holding okay for grasshoppers. My recommendation is to get out and make sure you're scouting those fields and looking for insect problems. This year we saw what we think is a new insect problem in the Northwest here, and that's in Northwest Minnesota. And that's where we saw several fields that have cereal leaf beetle. And that's a relatively new pest to us. It is over in North Dakota across the river. And so it makes sense that we would be, it seems to be part of an eastward expansion. And I suppose it's kind of made its way to here. These are interesting little beetles. When they're adults, they're maybe about half an inch long, quarter to half an inch long. They have these bright, brilliant blue, metallic blue wing covers on the back, and their head is this orange, almost a red. And so they're easy to see and they're easy to identify. Their larvae are the ones that may be doing maybe a little bit more damage, though. And they're not nice to deal with. They're ordinarily a bright yellow color. When you see them on the leaf, they're going to be a brown to really, really, kind of a light to a dark, dark brown. And that's because they cover themselves with their own feces as a way to not be eaten by other predators or by predators. So a charming insect to work with. But we have been seeing those as well. And the damage from those is what you're likely to see before you actually see the insects. The adults will chew down through. They start feeding always on the top of the leaf. They chew down to the bottom of the leaf membrane and then stop. And they walk forward as they eat. So you see this narrow kind of, obviously it'll turn kind of a whitish or a yellowish. And you'll see this long track up the leaf, up the weed leaf. And the larvae don't walk as well as the adults. So what they'll do is they'll kind of move across the leaf, and they cause same kind of colored damage, but it's a blotch, not a track. And the problem with that is because they're right down to the bottom membrane, that membrane will dry up and the leaf will snap off at that feeding point. The other downside about them is that they really love to get on the flag leaves after, you know, when they emerge, and that's where they'll do most of their feeding damage. And so it can be yield limiting. Good news is we really have not found very many fields, like maybe one or two, that would have been over threshold. So yes, they're here. It looks like right now we're not seeing as much economic damage as, you know, certainly that we're, you know, that we, well, we're glad we're not seeing it, put it that way.
Yeah.
I would have said as we expected, but because it's a new insect, it's kind of like, we're not sure what we should expect. Yeah. So, but talking to Dr. Janet Knodel over at NDSU, who's dealt with this for several years now, they've had them in North Dakota for several years, and she has also said they rarely see economically impacting populations over there, but they do see them, and I imagine that's what we're going to be when this kind of settles through. I'm sure that's going to be the same thing here. Is, you know, we may see economically damaged or economically damaging populations in some field, but it's probably not going to be widespread.
Okay. And I know we've heard from some growers that have been dealing with army worms this season. Have you seen a lot of that?
Well, and actually, when I was talking about cutworms and army worms, it's the same. Yeah, the army worms are actually kind of include them in the same field as cutworms, are the same family. But yeah, it's the same thing. And the lack of response to pyrethroids is a little concerning. Some of it, some of the incidents that I've heard of, you know, it's been a response to maybe spraying a time of day. So it could be, you know, those early morning applications seem to be working. The late, you know, the evening applications seem to be working, but the ones in the middle of the day when they're hiding out seem to be the ones that we're not getting the efficacy that we'd like to see in them. So again, when you're spraying for cutworms or armyworms, it's always a good idea to spray either early in the day or, you know, in the evening. Evening is probably better because that's when they're going to be coming out to feed and you're much more likely to get exposure to them. But the lack of residual is concerning. And I'm not sure if that's chemistry or if it's the insect. And if I was to guess, I'd say it's the insect more than the chemistry.
Okay. All right. Anything else that we should cover here before we let you go?
Oh, boy, there's stuff coming up every day, so I'm not sure. we're getting calls on a lot of things that we don't usually see a lot of, things like potato leafhopper and things like that in dry bean. And so it's kind of going to be one of those, I think it's going to be one of those catch-all summers. I don't know if we're going to have one huge issue like we had with grasshoppers, say, you know, 3 years ago when we had the large populations and it was an overwhelming, that was the overwhelmingly important pest. I think it's going to be pretty much a mixed bag. It has been so far. So I'm hoping we don't, which is actually easier to handle from a management viewpoint. So I'm hoping we don't actually get any one large outbreak from any one large species, because those become damaging and expensive to manage.
Mm-hmm. And with temperatures so high earlier here this spring, really, it just kind of went from winter to summer really fast. Yep. Does that impact insect pressure at all, or is that maybe what's kind of switched there, made things so mixed here?
You bet. It certainly does affect pest pressure. It does two things. Insects are cold-blooded, and consequently they depend on the ambient temperature to run. It basically affects the rate of all their physiological processes. And then they have an upper threshold, which will actually start shutting them down when it becomes very, very hot. You know, maybe over 100, and, you know, 100 plus. But that means that as the temperature goes up, they'll eat more. It means as they eat more, they're taking in more nutrition, which means they're generating eggs at a faster rate. The females are, and they're mating more, and they're laying more eggs. It can increase populations. But more importantly, it shortens the length of the generations. So if you have a number of pest species like aphids or, you know, a number of other pests that have multiple generations in a year, that means more generations to manage, because their generational time starts decreasing. So rather than taking 45 days to develop from egg to adult, it might take as short as 30 to 35 days, because the temperatures are so high that they're developing faster rate. And when that happens, it means that you've got more and more insects throughout the, you know, insects throughout the year to manage, and you end up with this mixed population. You're not just dealing with caterpillars. You've got more eggs out there, and you've got adults out there which don't feed in armyworms, but they're still laying eggs. And so it just means a faster turnover, and then it means a more consistent population of insects throughout the summer. It also increases the numbers that you may have. So it's one of the things that is going to drive insect population to, especially pest populations, to an increase. And then added to that, most pest species have a broader acceptance of optimum temperature range, and parasitoids and predators, which have a tendency to feed on them and maybe one of the mortality things that keep their population in check, those have a much, generally speaking, have less of a width of acceptable ranges of, say, temperature. So their populations may not be increasing anywhere near fast enough to compensate for these extra insect populations, these larger populations. And that's one of the leading causes of when we do get outbreaks, is because the natural mortality can't keep up with them. The other thing is, when you have warm springs, you don't have a lot of the fungal diseases develop that also help to control insect populations. There's a number of, you know, fungal diseases that insects can catch, and it causes a lot of mortality. In fact, it's one of the reasons we don't have, you know, that we're not hip deep every year in grasshoppers or aphids or something. And so if it's dry and hot, we don't get those. And so, yeah, those are things that actually help to increase the insect population. So yeah, you're right. Those early temperatures are not necessarily a favor.
All right. Anything else before we let you go? Any other tidbits of info here to remind producers of?
Oh, just keep scouting. Keep an eye on the fields always on a year like this, when the temperatures are going up and down and up and down, and we're getting, you know, it's dry at certain places. It means that we're not getting a lot of those natural mortalities working the way they should. And so insect populations are more likely to outbreak. And if we're not getting something that's a real common pest, and we're seeing really low populations of one thing, it opens up an opportunity for another insect to come in and start using that resource. And so you may have an outbreak of another insect that we don't usually see. So always a good idea to be out there scouting and keep an eye on the fields.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the information. Again, Dr. Ian McCrae joining us on the Red River Farm Network.